Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Mohamed Mirandi. Mohamed is an associate professor at the University of Tehran. He also chairs the North American Studies Department. He is very expert on issues and events going on in the Middle East. And my goodness, for so many years, there have certainly been riveting things going on throughout the region. I can almost hardly remember a time when something important wasn't going on. Just in my immediate memory, I go back to the beginning of the 1990s. That's over two decades ago. I mean, it has been nonstop horrors from then to today, and it's not stopping. Mohamed, welcome.
Here I am. I'm here.
Yes, can you hear me all right?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, maybe there's a slight delay from me to you and from you back to me, but I'm used to that on Press TV, so that's not a problem. Let's discuss the things most on your mind, but let me just raise one first because I've written twice about it, and it really is something that is capturing some of the alternative media headlines that I follow, and it's dramatic stuff, and I'm talking about what's going on in Libya, specifically Bani Walid, and I put out an article this morning that I call Genocide in Bani Walid. And I don't know any other way to describe it than that. Literally, genocide is being committed in a city of, I don't know how many people were there when the fighting began a few weeks ago, or let alone how many people are there now. But I think at one time the city had something like 70,000, 80,000 people, and nobody knows how many have been killed. But there was one report I saw that in one single day alone, 600 people were killed.
Well, unfortunately, things have unfolded in Libya in a very bad way. And unfortunately, this is something that I think many of us were saying would happen over a year ago, well over a year ago. Unfortunately, it is happening. The United States and NATO allies, they bombed the country's infrastructure and destroyed it, killing many people. So they will not acknowledge how many civilians were died during the effective civil war in Libya. On the other hand, when the South Africans were trying to mediate between the Gaddafi regime, which was a brutal regime, a very dictatorial regime, but when they were mediating to create a ceasefire between them and the opposition agreed. And this is something that Ibrahim said to me and a number of other people who had met him, the Deputy Foreign Minister of South Africa, and he said the opposition agreed to it. And that, but then they left the room and returned, and they said, no, under no circumstances can we have a ceasefire. And it was obvious that Western countries and the Arab dictatorships, the Saudis and so on, they didn't agree to a ceasefire. And the bloodshed continued. Now that Gaddafi is gone, suddenly all the murders and bloodshed that is taking place in the country has gone beneath the radar. If Gaddafi was carrying out such slaughter, it would have been an evil thing. But now, apparently, when Russians took a statement to the Security Council to express their concern for the Security Council, UN Security Council, to express its concern about what's going on right now, the Americans blocked it. So, this sort of hypocrisy, I think, in the long run, is going to hurt the Americans very much in this very volatile part of the world.
There's a lot of evidence that I have written about from time to time, and I believe you can go back to the 1990s, Mohammed, and discover that the dark forces I talk about in America planned multiple wars in the Middle East, and I think maybe the nexus of the planning might have been Paul Wolfowitz, but he had a lot of help. I mean, I think his planning went back to the early 1990s, and there were about six or seven or more countries in the region that were singled out for regime change. Iran, I'm afraid, is very much one of them. No surprise to anybody. But all the wars that have taken place, beginning with the Gulf War, of course, in 1991, but then post 9/11, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, what's going on in Syria now, trouble spilling over the border into Lebanon, constant Israeli bombing of Gaza. I mean, it goes on and on, just endlessly, and the region is just a cauldron. And I believe the dark force behind all of it is my own country, Mohammed. I think Washington bears full responsibility for everything going on in the region. And if none of this was ever discussed in Washington any time by anybody, I don't think there would have been a single war by one country against any other one. Nor would any country in the region feel threatened with war, but everyone should feel threatened that anybody can be attacked, and even if you're not attacked, the conflict can spill cross-border, and anything can happen. It's really a grave situation.
I agree completely. The big problem right now, I think, is that the United States government, the current president of the United States, when he came to power, my understanding is that most Americans and the vast majority of people in the region and across the globe were hoping for some real shift in the United States and in U.S. policy, and that a more humane approach to world affairs would be pursued. Unfortunately, and especially since Obama is an African American, people across in the Middle East were even more optimistic because they thought that he would have a better understanding of what subjugation, injustice, racism actually means. But unfortunately, he's turned out to be not just a continuation of the Bush regime and Bush years, but in many ways he's become worse because he came in the name of human rights and greater humanity and greater understanding. And I think it has caused an enormous amount of disillusionment towards the United States. For example, the fact that the United States regularly carries out drone attacks in different countries. Any adult, male adult, that is killed by the drones is automatically considered an enemy combatant. This is something that people across the region find outrageous. Regardless of whether Americans know this or not, but the people of the region do, they know these things, and it outrages them. The fact that the United States is speaking about human rights in Syria, yet it, along with its allies, are the main perpetrators in the country. They're the ones who are pushing the country towards civil war. When the UN representative, Kofi Annan, called for a ceasefire and fair elections, with international monitors, the Iranians supported this position. The Syrian government said they'll support this position. But Western countries and their regional allies said absolutely not. And this is something that, one finds extraordinary. The fact that with international monitors coming to Syria and participating and watching over the electoral process, there would have been a real chance for progress in the country and for an end to the bloodshed. But the Americans, in order to get revenge from Iran, are basically pushing Syria towards civil war. And then, of course, you have the embargo and sanctions on the Iranian central bank, where the objective is to prevent Iran from even importing medicine and foodstuff. Now, the Americans and the Europeans haven't succeeded, but they have made life more difficult for some Iranians. And the objective is to shut down the central bank. And when you shut down a country's central bank, it is basically to make people go hungry and for people to die for lack of medicine, because you need a central bank to import and export. So people see these things, and what I'm very concerned about is that anti-American feelings and sentiments throughout the region are on the rise, and that countries are becoming less stable because the United States has destroyed different countries by bombing them and destroying their infrastructure. And so there are lots of people now with arms, thanks to the fall the disorganized fall of the Gaddafi regime and what's going on in Syria. So lots of people have weapons. Extremists have weapons. The Americans the American government is an extremist government. And this will lead to, you know, greater confrontation, terrorism, and a situation in which no one wins.
Well, that's exactly true, Mohammed. And I can understand that people in other parts of the world would think that maybe an Obama would be different from a John McCain succeeding George Bush in 2008. Most Americans certainly felt that way, so certainly people in other parts of the world would feel that way. And I know firsthand, I live in Chicago, and the celebration of Obama's victory took place just 2 or 3 miles from where I live downtown in a big park. And the announcement came at 10 p.m. They had a big TV. I wasn't there, but I wrote about it. A big TV screen set up in this park. And when the announcement came that it was official and Obama was elected, I mean, Chicago, even before the announcement, that night in early November became New Year's Eve, about 2 months early. And the whole city exploded. And during the day, a company shut down early. They let their employees go home. I mean, it wasn't a holiday. It was just election day. Employers don't shut down to let people go and vote. I mean, it's ridiculous that you would have an election day on a normal working day. Many, many countries, maybe most of them, have it on a weekend when fewer people may be working and more able to get out easily. But America always has it the first Tuesday in November for the national elections, and local elections can run them any way they choose. But the city just exploded in joy. And I mean, it was, I don't think there's been a New Year's Eve as exuberant as that night. And I wrote about Obama before the election. I went back and I wrote about his record in the U.S. Senate and even some information on his history, his supposed activism in Chicago, and his entree to politics in Chicago. And if you took a look at the record of this guy, you came to the conclusion that he was as much Republican as any Republican. And if anybody thought they were going to get a progressive change with Obama, they were living in a dream world. Well, even I couldn't have imagined that as far as wars would go, Mohammed, that he wouldn't just double down George Bush. I mean, he tripled down, even more than tripled down George Bush. You know, Bush had Afghanistan and then Iraq, and Obama has got those. I mean, the war in Iraq isn't over. I mean, there are car bombs going on all the time. People are getting killed. All kinds of horrors going on in the country. And you've got those two going on, and you've got Libya, which is raging, not just in Bani Walid, but across the country. And I've written a few times on that. And you've got all the proxy wars. You've got Yemen. You've got Somalia. You've got, my goodness, there's probably stuff going on I don't even know about. There's talk about America involved maybe with NATO and invading Mali. I wonder how many Americans know anything about that. I mean, this stuff just goes on. And this is Obama, the peace candidate? Shocking. Shocking.
I agree with you, and I think that like yourself, there were numerous people who from the very start were very skeptical of Obama, and I think there were quite a few Americans that were skeptical who actually voted anyway because they were hoping that somehow Obama would change direction. And, you know, to their disappointment, it turned out that, as you say, he's just as right-wing as any other right-wing president of the United States. And one of the, you know, harsh realities of the United States is that people really don't have a choice. They don't have a democratic choice. They have to choose between a Romney and an Obama who try to outdo each other in speaking an extremist language and being dishonest to the American people about the reality of the Middle East and of the reality in Iran. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, as the United States continues to have major economic problems and as things continue to get more difficult and more critical in Europe, these policies will not only create greater tension and greater violence throughout the Middle East and North Africa, which will probably spread to other parts of the world, including the United States and Western Europe, but also I think they're going to help create a worse economic environment in the United States itself. It's not going to help American hegemony for those who really want to have the United States as a hegemonic power. It is draining America's energy, and it is creating great hostility, and they're no longer, and the old pro-American dictatorships in the region are no, many of them are no longer there, or if they are, they're not, it's not really clear if they're in full control anymore. So, you know, the United States has no option if it wants to find a reasonable solution to its problems. It has no option but to take a more realistic approach. But, you know, that's how the United States is. The media is in the hands of corporate America. People, reasonable people like Ron Paul, I don't want to comment on any of his internal policies, but his foreign policy is worlds apart from that of any other of the Republican or Democratic candidates, far more progressive, far more reasonable. But, you know, he was never even allowed to have a chance. And even regardless of what his local and internal politics for the United States were, if someone like him were elected, whether those policies were good or not, his foreign policy would by itself have made life much better for ordinary Americans and would have decreased tensions throughout the Middle East and North Africa dramatically. But as I said, you know, Obama, Romney, you know, corporate America, these are unfortunately the realities that dominate U.S. politics, and people really don't have much of a choice.
There's no choice at all, and I make no bones about it. A money power, the power of big corporations and mainly the bankers, the people who control the money, that's where the real power is, and they're the ones who control the country. And even if you got a Ron Paul or a very progressive candidate being elected president, I think I would have to be reincarnated before I ever see that possibility happen over here, Mohammed. But if that happened, you've still got the Congress to deal with, and the Congress pretty much rubber stamps everything the president wants, as long as it follows the corporate line and the big money line. But if it runs against the grain, then the president might have a very, very hard time. There's an old quote by Churchill. I forget the exact words, and I don't know if I'll live long enough to see it. But the quote, something to the effect that America always ends up doing the right thing after exhausting all the other alternatives.
But I think that in the current case, it could prove much more costly than anything that the United States had to deal with in the past, because countries like China, like India, like Brazil, like Russia are not going to wait for the United States. And as the United States becomes more despised throughout the world, not the Muslim world, I think I think it would be mistaken for Americans to think that in Latin America the U.S. government is popular, in Africa the U.S. government is popular, or in Asia it's popular. It's not, and it's because of these policies that the American government pursues. And when the United States becomes more unpopular, so do the Europeans. You know, brand China becomes more appealing, brand Brazil, brand, you know, India, brand Russia, whether Americans like it or not, that's a reality.
Oh, that's so true. Absolutely true. I think the large majority of people in Latin America want nothing to do with America. My God, I mean, America's foot has been on Latin America for generations. My goodness, back to the 19th century. And I'm sure that the parents see enough to kids so that they know the legacy of America and the harm that it causes in the region. And Latin America hasn't made as much of a break from their North American neighbor as I would like, but in the new millennium years, it's so different there than it was in the 1990s and earlier, where America literally had a stranglehold on the region and ran everything. But I can't imagine that African people like the U.S. government, and you always have to separate the government from ordinary people, and I'm sure people make that distinction, Mohammed, because it's not the American people that have these policies and commit these awful things that harm so many people. It's the people running the government that are doing it to their own people right here in this country. The harm that is being done to Americans, you know, there's not war in the streets, but there's war in different forms. There's financial war waged on people. Poverty is at record levels, and homelessness and hunger. I mean, this is financial war that's causing these problems. There are police state laws that proliferate the books, mostly at the federal level, and innocent people, Muslims, are the target of choice, but it can be anybody who challenges the system that they go up against, that they will come after you in some way. Dissidence in America is a very hazardous occupation, dare I say. I mean, I'm doing it, and I'm aware all the time that if they want to silence me, they certainly can do it very, very easily. Hasn't happened yet, and they're not going to stop me from doing what I'm doing as long as I'm able to do it, but I know full well they could come and get me anytime, and this may be the future of America. I'm very fearful, Mohammed. I think it is planned to have another major false flag attack like 9/11. And make no mistake, 9/11 was a false flag. Had nothing to do with crazed Arabs on a few airplanes. It was my own government, and I think Israel's Mossad that are the dirty hands beside that. And I believe there will be another one coming. When these people get in trouble, the solution is scare the dickens out of the people at home, and the best way to do it is have another major false flag, point fingers the wrong way. But this one, it could be worse than 9/11, and the hammer could come down much harder. And there are people who believe, and I agree with them, that the Constitution could be suspended, martial law could be declared, and Nazi Germany will have arrived in America full-blown. That's what I fear. Oops. I think we were disconnected. Well, let's try to get Mohammed back on the line again. I don't know what happened on his end. Let's try to get him back. Whether somebody, I mean, it's very possible that somebody mischievously is interfering in this conversation. Well, they might silence Mohammed, but they won't silence me. I mean, these are very, very serious things. We literally face a time in America and in the world where the government in Washington, and it doesn't matter whether it's Obama or Romney, and I like to say it could be Mickey Mouse sitting in the Oval Office, there is a war on humanity going on, and the name of the game for the people in power and the corporatists that they're complicit with, the name of the game is massive wealth accumulation, unchallenged dominance, and you take it out of the hides of ordinary people here in America and around the world. And the ultimate tool to get what you want, if you can't get it any other way, is you go to war. And America proves that all the time. America goes to war with one country after another. Mohammed, we're back on again. I think we got disconnected. How or why, who knows? But you probably missed my comments. But if you remember the thought you were on when we were disconnected, maybe you can pick up at that point.
Yes, I'm just saying that, you know, even for those Americans, who I'm sure are a minority, who actually want the United States to be the world leader. I mean, I think most Americans would just like America to get along with the rest of the world and for people in the United States and beyond to live in peace. But even for those Americans who want the United States to be a hegemonic power, I think these policies are proving to be very hurtful for the United States, because Americans' rivals like China, India, Russia, Brazil, and others, they are growing at a very rapid pace. They are much more popular than the United States and the Europeans because they're not launching wars on one country after another. You know, whether ordinary Americans like the Russians or the Chinese or the Indians or the Brazilians really is irrelevant, because they're proving to be much more popular in Africa, Latin America, and in Asia. So brand America, brand Europe are very much hurt. They're not very popular, and their rivals are becoming popular. And so perpetual war, threats of war, sanctions, and attempting to dictate one's terms upon other countries is not going to work anymore. This is not the 1980s or the 1970s where there was a bipolar world. Now there are multiple countries that are growing. And unless the United States changes direction very rapidly, I think you're going to see the United States lose its global status very rapidly.
Well, I absolutely agree on that, and I mentioned it on an interview that I had this week, that a prior guest I had on this program, and he mentioned what he said on air with me in a book that he wrote. He believed that America's decline began incredibly back during the Korean War. There are other people who think that America's decline began during the Vietnam War. And I think there's a greater number, Mohammed, who believe that one of the reasons behind 9/11 was to change the focus, because America was declining too fast. So America needed to regain power. They needed to marshal support for America, you know, arouse world sympathy. Well, there was an awful lot of world sympathy after 9/11. It was unwarranted, but it existed. And how? And America, of course, planned all these wars. I don't know how it could have imagined it could keep world support by going to war with one country after another. And I don't think America has been more hated around the world by far than it is today. And from a country... Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, there was a lot of sympathy for Americans after 9/11 because of what Al-Qaeda did, but not for the American government, because many people outside the United States, despite the fact that many Americans were not well informed, but many people outside the United States knew that Al-Qaeda was to a large degree created by the United States and the Saudi regime, which is an extremist Wahhabi Salafi regime. But one of the ironies today is to see that Al-Qaeda, which used to be enemy number one for the United States, you know, you're either with us or against us, and, you know, wanted dead or alive, this same Al-Qaeda is now working alongside the United States in Syria. And so it is, you know, one of the paradoxes of the world that we live in is that the United States is bombing Al-Qaeda, or allegedly bombing Al-Qaeda, in countries like Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. Of course, we don't know who's being killed, because the Pakistan is saying a lot of civilians are dying, and that this policy is creating outrage among ordinary people. But in any case, they're allegedly bombing Al-Qaeda people in one country, and yet they are allowing Al-Qaeda in Syria and in Lebanon now to flourish. And so people are you know, sitting back and looking and watching and saying to themselves, what in the world is the United States government up to? One day, you know, they are now creating a monster again, which will strike hard at the United States when the time comes. And what we saw in Libya is more or less, you know, it is already it is blowback, but I think it's a sign of things to come. So again, the problem is that the American government, through its really inhuman actions, makes people outside the United States dislike the country. Otherwise, people outside the United States were very sympathetic for ordinary Americans after the tragedy on 9/11.
Oh, again, so true, Mohammed. We're just about out of time, but America's foreign policy, I think you could sum it up by calling it perpetual war and perpetual bloodshed. I mean, literally going back to the just post 9/11, all of America's direct and proxy wars, they're going on endlessly. There literally is no end in sight to any of them, and they turn. I mean, they're charnel house conditions in these countries, and this could literally go on in perpetuity. As long as America wants to stay in Afghanistan and claim the right to occupy it, the bloodshed will continue. And I think the same is true in Iraq.
The decline of the U.S. economy as a result of mismanagement and unjust policies at home, as well as American adventurism abroad, will really bring this to an abrupt end in the not-so-distant future.
Oh, it really will.
I think life from...
Chalmers Johnson wrote 3 books about this, and he talked about America bankrupting itself, overreach with all of this military adventurism around the world, and he saw nothing but a bad ending to it, including a despotic situation right here in America. He just saw the worst of outcomes on this. He was a very astute guy. Sadly, he passed away a couple of years ago. We certainly could use him now. Mohammed, we are out of time.
Just one final note.
Yeah.
And that is that when you spoke of despoticism, you know, right now the American government is preventing Iranian channels from beaming into the United States and
yes.
or European governments.
Oh.
And that is a sign that, you know, intolerance in these countries is decreasing.
Absolutely. And Britain just put on the air an anti-Iranian channel. I have to believe that there is British funding behind it. But, Mohammed, we are out of time. I look forward to getting you back again. And I'll just invite my listeners. We'll be on again Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.